Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts, Dana Osband, here with my friend Chavruta and Gordon. Our daf today, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf Tzamech Bet, page 62. The daf begins with a lengthy discussion about the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan about whether or not interest is recoverable, meaning if interest is paid, does it get paid back to the person who paid it? And they try to bring a bunch of different, Rabbi Yochanan feels that it is actually, and they try to bring a bunch of, Rabbi Yochanan feels that it is not, And so they bring a variety of different Tannaitic proofs to prove, what he actually says about whether or not you would pay interest back or you would, and whether they can prove his point that you actually, interest is not recoverable. Later on, then, they get to a statement of Rav Safra, and that's where I want to start from, where he gives a halachic ruling on what types of interest are recoverable, right? In contrast to the whole discussion we have with Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rav Safra, so Rav Safra says, Kol she'ilu b'dinehem motzi'in milove l'malveh. Any type of interest which, according to their law, and what this means is non-Jewish law, meaning non-halachic law, they would take away from the borrower and give to the lender. So in other words, any case where the Gentile courts, the non-Jewish courts, would enforce its payment. So, for example, let's say it could be a case of prearranged interest, right? The non-Jewish court would force the borrower to honor his commitment and pay the interest. A Jewish court wouldn't have done that, okay? So that would be an example of a type of interest which, according to non-Jewish law, right, they take away from the borrower and give to the lender. B'dineinu machzirim milaveh l'loveh. Then according to our law, right, meaning Torah law, if the interest has been paid, we return it from the lender to the borrower, okay? So in other words, the Jewish court would basically force the lender to refund it. Now, what's interesting here is that what he's saying is that the non-Jewish court could enforce the interest payment, right, because it was pre-arranged. But the idea here is that the Jewish court would actually force the lender to return it to the borrower. However, any type of interest which, according to their law, they would not take away from the borrower and give to the lender, then according to our law, right, if the interest has been paid, we do not return it from the lender to the borrower. Okay, so in other words, the Jewish court wouldn't enforce its refund. So now the Gemara wants to know, okay, explore this a little bit more. Amar le Abaye le Rav Yosef. So Abaye said to Rav Yosef, Uklelahu, is this really a general rule? Vahare seya b'seya, right? When we have a loan of a seya of produce for a repayment of seya, div dinehem motziim milaveh l'malveh, which according to their law, they would take away from the borrower and give to the lender. In other words, the non-Jewish court would force the repayment of the seya, even if the price increased over the period of the loan. Ubedinenu ein machzirim milaveh l'loveh. Yet according to our law, if it was repaid, we don't return it from the lender to the borrower, right? So in other words, everyone is basically agreeing that any type of like rabbinic interest, that's what abak rebate is, right? We can't recover it. So a loan of a seya for a seya is prohibited rabbinically but not biblically, and it's because at the time of the loan it's not known whether the price of the goods is going to actually increase or not. So that type of borrowing is not in the category of rebate kitsutza, which means like a prearranged interest, right, which is the only type of interest that's prohibited from a deoraisa level. So if the value of the goods didn't increase and the borrower repaid the seya, the Jewish court won't force the lender to refund the excess value to the borrower. They just, they wouldn't. So Rav Yosef, because it's really, it's rabbinic, it's not biblical. So Rav Yosef answers, Amarle, he said to him, Inhu b'tarat pikadon ata lidei. They, the non-Jews, regarded as though the seya came into the recipient's possession as a deposit, okay? Meaning, when they look at, the non-Jewish law looks at a seya for a seya transaction, it's not a loan, but it's a deposit of seya produce, which is to be returned. So they don't think of it as a transaction of interest, even if the price of the seya rises, right? And this the Gemara is going to explain. So what Rav Safra means here is that any payment that the non-Jewish court enforces as interest, that is what is recoverable by Jewish law. So now the Gemara wants to give an exception to this. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. So Ravina says to Ravashi, Vare mishkanta belo nichita. Right, but surely, right, when we're talking about a case of a lender who uses property as a pledge without a reduction of debt, div dinehem motzim milola lamalva, right, which according to their law, they take away from the borrower and they give to the lender, meaning if the borrower did not keep the agreement and took the fruit for himself, a non-Jewish court would force him to pay it back to the lender. So to the lender. Yet according to our law, we do not return from the lender to the borrower, right? An arrangement for the lender to take the produce of the field, right, as a pledge is not considered rebate, right? Kitzutza, it's not prearranged interest, because the condition of it to be considered rebate kitzutza is that the interest has to be certain. But when the lender may not get any interest at all if the crop fails, for example. So this is a case of just what we call avak rebate. Like it's just the dust of rebate, which is only prohibited rabbinically, and therefore it's not actually recoverable. So Rav Ashi says, Amarle, he says to Ravina, Inhu b'tarat zivne ata lidaihu. They, the non-Jews, regard pledged property as if it had come to the lender's possession already as a purchase. So when the lender takes that property as a pledge, he has use of the produce while he holds it. And the non-Jewish court doesn't hold the property as a pledge for a loan, but rather property sold to the lender for the money loan. So when the borrower pays the loan, he's actually redeeming the sold field. So they enforce the lender's right to take the produce, right? They are not enforcing an interest payment. They're enforcing the right of the buyer to take the produce of his acquired property. So what Rav Safra means here is that any payment that the Gentiles enforce as interest, that is what is recoverable as Jewish law and under halachic law. So now that they explain the exceptions, the Gemara now says, Ela kol she'elu b'dinehen de ka'amar Rav Safra. If so, the rule, any interest which is according to their law, that Rav Safra states, right, ma'ata lashmu'inan. What does it come to actually teach us, right? If Rav Safra's rule is basically limited to only things that the non-Jewish courts treat as interest, what cases of interest are there in which a non-Jewish court would not enforce payment and therefore we would not enforce a refund? Okay, so the Gemara answers, Hachi atza l'ashmu'inan. This is what it comes to teach us. Kol she'ilu b'dinehan motzi'im milovel l'malve. Right? The first part of the rule that says any interest according to their law they would take away from the borrower and give to the lender. B'dineinu machzirim milovel l'malve. Then according to our law, the interest was paid. And we return it from the lender to the borrower. Umayninu, what type of interest is this? Beribit kitzutza, ukid de Rabbi Elazar. It's prearranged interest according to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, who holds that that is actually recoverable in court. So non-Jews would enforce its payment, and we would enforce its refund. Kol she'ilu b'dinehen ein motziim b'dineinu ein machzirin. The second part of what Rav Safra says, which is any interest which according to their law they would not take away from the borrower, then according to our law we don't return to the borrower if it was already paid, is talking about rebit mikudemet, right? That's advance interest, rebit miucheret, right? And subsequent interest. When the payment the Gentiles would not enforce, so therefore we're not going to enforce its refund either. So a little bit of a confusing. I think there's a lot of different terms here. Actually, it's a kind of passage where you sort of need to almost like write it all out a little bit to get all the types of payments. But the bottom line is, what it's basically talking about is that Rav Safra is basically saying it has to be considered interest by the non-Jews. The Gemara listed out a bunch of cases where we think of it as interest, but the non-Jews do not think of it as interest. And therefore, those are not cases covered by Rav Safra's statement.
I think it's fascinating. I find it fascinating that the issues between Jews and non-Jews with rebate, with interest of all kinds, right, goes back this far. I guess technically we can understand it goes back to the Torah, where the Torah draws a distinction between, you know, whether it's, you know, your fellow Jew or not. But I wouldn't necessarily infer from that there's going to be issues between things being handled differently in the different courts. Although you know, I think that's a fallacy on my part, meaning I think that the Gemara is doing something that makes perfect sense to do, except for that I'm so, I guess, entrenched in my knowledge of later Jewish history that I think of it as something that developed later, and clearly that's not the case.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what's so fascinating, like you said, is seeing this interplay between the non-Jewish courts versus the Jewish courts, and there's a real awareness here that the Jewish courts, this functions differently. But I think some of the subtext here also is Jews were really borrowing from Jews or lending to Jews. Like, it doesn't sound like you really went to non-Jews to do these types of things.
Right. At least, certainly not at this point. Right. I think that's true. Right. Okay. I'm going to pick up on Amud Bet, going back to what I thought to begin with was a difficult element of the Mishnah. When we were talking, well, the Mishnah there talks about exchanging one core of wheat for one gold dinar, which is worth 25 silver dinar, and then the wheat is going to be supplied at a later date, and then you get the market price. It's that, and it went up, and now it's 30 dinar, right? And so now what's going to happen in terms of the exchange? And the buyer says to the seller, okay, give me all of my wheat, and I'm going to use it to purchase wine. And as I said then, you know, I'm not sure that it has to be wine per se, but to purchase some other commodity, right, some other product, and you'll have that right to collect the value from me, right? And then, but this seller doesn't have wine in his possession, so then the seller becomes the borrower with regard to the lender, right? Meaning, which ends up being that it's as if he's lending the wheat to the seller because he doesn't have the wine to provide for the end of the transaction, so to speak. And so the Gemara here now on Amud Bet says, Ketzad, meaning, so what if he doesn't have any wine, right? What does that matter? Ketzad, lakachi menu chitim b'dinar zahav hakor v'chein asher v'chulei v'chi ein lo yayin mai have. So what? Like, what? Why is this relevant, whether he can make that subsequent transaction? It feels like, you know, being a lending library or a banker where you're not just a banker, but you're also going to be the merchant who provides some other, you know, the thing that the buyer wants to take home. So the Gemara here brings in a breita that is going to, you know, raise a question on this. Vatanya ein poskin al peirot ad sheyitzei ha'shar, yitzei ha'shar poskin afal pi she'ein lezeh yesh lezeh. So there's this breita that says, right, that when you're buying produce and you're going to have it collected by the buyer at a later time, you can't set the price. Meaning this breita establishes that one is not allowed to set the price for that produce until the sha'ar, until the market rate is publicized. Because if the rate has been publicized, then you can set the rate, you know, based on what the market rate is. Even if you don't have the produce on hand, you know what the going rate is. But if you don't have the market rate at all, then you can't have the negotiation over what your transaction is going to be, because you don't have enough information, and so then you end up with, you know, it's a limbo situation, and it leads to a situation or a potential situation of interest, because if the buyer if the buyer doesn't receive that produce immediately, because it's not there, because the seller doesn't have it yet, then he's not at risk of being left high and dry. He's at risk of the cost of the produce changing as the sha'ar, as the market rate changes, and then what's going to be for the two of them. Amar Rabba, Manitin Bava Lachov B'demehen Askinan. So Rabba says, in the Mishnah, we're dealing with somebody who's coming to incur a debt to begin with for the value of that wine. Meaning the borrower, which really is the seller, right? Had the seller possessed wine at the time that the buyer wants to swap out the wheat to purchase wine, then it would just be a sale. It would be fine. But since he doesn't have any wine, and so he says, I'll give you wine later for your wheat, then it ends up being essentially a loan with interest instead of a sale, because the time factor here establishes it as a loan. I think, I don't know that we have a precise time limit on how long something is to be considered a sale, an immediate transaction, versus a loan. But it's clear that if it's, you know, he doesn't have it in his property, in his possession, and the buyer is going to have to wait an indeterminate amount of time. We're not talking like, hang on 3 minutes, I'll be right back. Then we have this situation of the lending with interest. We have another breakdown. Because the Tanya, Harei Shayano Seba Chaviro Maneh V'Halach V'Amad Al Gorno. So the one person is owed by another, right? 100 dinar, maneh. And he goes and he waits by the granary there and says, okay, tein li ma'otai, give me my money. Shani wrote, said, likach ba'am chitim, I'm going to go buy wheat. Amar lo, chitim yeshli, shani no tein lecha, tse vase alai kishar shal achshav. He says, I have wheat. You know, let me give you wheat instead of the money that I owe you. And, you know, we'll do it on the current market rate. Vani ale lecha kol shnaim shnemasar chodesh asur, right? And he says, I'll give you the amount of that wheat over 12 months, even if the price rises, right? But then it's still not, that's considered asur, right? It's not acceptable. Why? Because that's going to be interest. So the Gemara goes on to say, delav ki sarod habali ado dami. It's not like the case of where somebody gets an isar is a more valuable coin, right? In this case, the lender doesn't give the borrower even that one single isar as a payment, meaning, so it's not a sale. Then you could talk about, is it the right price to pay? But in this case, because there's no money changing hands, it's considered a loan, and then eventually that loan is going to be collected with interest, and that is the problem. Abaye takes some issue with this because there's a way to understand it to say, well, then, you know, isn't that only, once you say it's not like the case of an isar that comes to his hand, then isn't it specifically here about the wine, right? What if he, because he doesn't have wine, what if he did have wine? And the point being then, even if he were to have the wine, it would still be forbidden because he didn't give any money at the time of the acquisition to begin with. So that this concern of rebate of interest, is actually, it's a little bit more far-reaching, I think, than is implied from just don't charge interest, right? Don't charge the increase or the interest. In these cases, coming up with the way the interest is being charged is already a bit more complicated, and recognizing just how far we're supposed to steer clear of it.
Well, that's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Revenue Shell Farber for hosting us on the Hadra website. Let us know what you thought about this DAP on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.